Well, Rory McIlroy certainly came out roaring at Pebble Beach, and Fluff is on the bag with us this time as we step to the first tee of a new episode of Musings on Golf. Along with Bob Bubka, the voice of golf for TalkSport in the UK, my name is Kelly Elbin, and today you'll hear our interview with the mustachioed one, Fluff Cowan, whose more than 40 years on tour include four unforgettable rounds in 1997 at the Masters with Tiger Woods. We'll also review a week that the PGA Tour, quite honestly, really needed at Pebble, with top names, lots of drama, and an iconic venue. Now, Bob, you and I talked with Fluff yesterday. He had quite a run on tour with a face that every golfer knows and loves, to be honest.
No, you're right about that, Kelly. But the amazing thing about Fluff Cowan, well known for that mustache, but those that know him best, he has a big heart. He's just terrific as a person, a hell of a player, obviously a hell of a caddy, and I'm proud to call him a friend. That's the bottom line.
And in the interview, as you'll hear, he talked about thoughts that, you know, if it didn't work out caddying, that he might go out and try to play professionally. I mean, he played collegiately at a small school in Iowa. He can play. He's a member of Congressional Country Club, plays a lot of golf. And Bob, his knowledge, though, I think he's also a guy who maybe sort of low keys his value, because him being on that bag with Tiger all those years with Furyk, man, he was invaluable throughout those years. That's a long time to be that good at that level on tour.
Very well said, Kelly. I think he's underappreciated as a caddy. He's very calm. He knows when to say something. He knows when not to say something. And that probably, if you evaluate it, that's the biggest single asset a caddy can bring to a player: telling him when to do something and when not to do something.
Right. And I think he, when Tiger went out and shot 40 on the front in 97 at Augusta National, like, he was kind of that leveling presence for him to say, look, we've got a lot of golf ahead of us. Let's just go out, let's get it going. And shoots 30 on the back and goes on and wins in historic fashion in 97. We didn't necessarily see history, Bob, at Pebble Beach. But I don't know about you, but I was really glad to see Rory McIlroy win. It had been a while since he'd won on American turf. First golfer in 20 years to reach 27 PGA Tour wins since Phil did it. And that's pretty strong when you consider how much time he spends on the PGA Tour, splitting his time with the DP World Tour. His 40th worldwide win against good field. I loved everything about the 4 days at Pebble Beach and at Spyglass, where he made an ace to start it off.
And if you think you loved everything at Pebble Beach, just tell you a little secret. The grass got a little greener at Augusta National because that's the kind of form they want to see, you know, Rory come into Augusta and try and complete that Grand Slam. I mean, he is such a fabulous golfer. He's been through so much. And, you know, when he's on his game, boy, oh boy, there's nobody better out there.
I agree with that. We're going to hear from him after the interview with Fluff. Bob, is it too early, in your opinion, is it too early to tell what a victory at Pebble Beach might mean for Rory as he looks ahead to that first week, that first full week in April?
Well, it means everything. I mean, Rory's the type of guy, he gets a little bit of confidence, he gets a little more confidence, and he's such a wonderful ball striker. I mean, when he's on song, that ball coming off that driver makes it sound like no other player out there.
I know he spent a lot of time in the off season, went to a simulator in New York and sort of decided to tweak, not redo, you don't redo your golf swing if you're Rory McIlroy, but kind of tweaked his golf swing. And it seems like the mindset is a little bit different too, Bob. I mean, he's got to be realizing, hey, I need to get this done. Maybe I need to do it a little differently to accomplish my goals.
Yeah, he's tried a lot of different ways. And, you know, sometimes you could have the greatest tournament and not win. Other times you could have a subpar tournament and win. I think a Masters would only be fitting for Rory McIlroy. It would make a wonderful Augusta National champion.
Yeah, no question about it. You all are going to really enjoy this interview that we had with Fluff Cowan. Again, Fluff was on the bag for 40 years with the likes of Peter Jacobson, Tiger, and Jim Furyk, three different kinds of guys, two major championships, the 97 Masters, obviously, and the 2003 U.S. Open with Jim Furyk. And you'll hear that interview with Michael Fluff Cowan right after you hear from our partners, our corporate friends here on Musings on Golf, William and Harry and Titleist. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with your wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Bob, our special guest today, celebrates a birthday later this week. And without having ever struck a single shot in competition, he is still one of the most recognizable figures on the PGA Tour. He is, as Peter Jacobson told me earlier today, quote, an incredible friend, person, and caddy. And Peter also added this, quote, for anyone to adjust to the personalities of me, Tiger, and Furyk, that's all you need to know about him. Versatility and patience, end quote. What a pleasure to welcome the one and only Michael Thomas Fluff Cowan to Musings on Golf. Hey, Fluff, early birthday wishes. How in the world are you?
Thank you. Oh, I'm doing okay. Can't complain. Actually, it's kind of exciting times around here. After the snow that we've been dealing with for the last month, I didn't go play, but I found out today that the golf course is open for play out at Congressional. So that was good.
Yeah, I know you're anxious to get out there, right?
The snow has cleared. Well, I'm kind of anxious, yes. I'm looking, yeah. I'll probably, in all likelihood, I'll play tomorrow. If I wasn't doing this call, I'd be doing it right now.
There you go. Hey, Fluff, Bob Bupka.
Hey, Bob.
Good to hear your voice, my friend.
Oh, man, you too. It's been a long time.
Oh, boy. I have a fond memory. We're sitting at the Ritz on Maui at that back bar overlooking the ocean, and I'm sitting there having a little cocktail with my man, Fluff Cowan. What a thrill that was.
Oh, easy, Bob. Yeah, there were a lot of good times back then. I can remember staying with you guys, I believe. I can't remember now if it was a PGA or what it was, but it was a PGA at Hazeltine. When you guys got a house and took me in.
Yeah, you're the best guest. You're the best guest we ever took in.
Thanks.
Let me ask you this, Fluff. How'd you get that nickname?
Oh, geez. Two or three of guys at caddies that originated down in Jacksonville. They knew Steve Melnick through those early years and knew that his nickname in college, and I'm sure to a lot of people still is, Fluff was Steve's nickname, and these guys started calling me Short Fluff, and it wasn't too awfully long before nobody was saying short anymore, and there was Fluff, That's the boring story of it.
It's exciting to me and exciting to the golf world. Without a doubt, probably the most recognizable caddy ever to take a loop.
Well, you know, that's very flattering, and I do appreciate you saying it. But, you know, in my mind, there are a couple other guys that came before me that were very recognizable, too.
Who stands out? Who were the couple guys before you that stand out as just great caddies?
Well, great caddies and kind of recognizable all get out was Angelo.
Yeah.
Caddy for Jack forever. And Herman Mitchell, caddy for Trevino.
Trevino, yeah. Two very different kind of characters, right? Angelo, what was it? Angelo Arguia, I think his last name. And I always thought that Angelo kind of just blended in there. He seemed rather quiet, whereas Herman was anything but. I mean, what a character he was.
Oh, Herman was a wonderful guy. I loved Herman Mitchell. He was always fun to hang out with in the caddy yard.
Very loyal to Lee, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, big time.
Let me ask you this, Fluff. Tiger goes out and shoots 40 on the first nine at Augusta in 97. Did you say anything to him at the turn that contributed to the 30 that he shot on the second nine?
Well, I can't say as I said anything that contributed to it at all. But what I did say was that that's just the first nine holes. Let's just go out and shoot under par on the second nine, and we're going to be just fine. I had no idea he was going to go out and shoot 30.
Let me ask you this, Fluff. I'm curious. How much better... or is he better, Tiger, than Rory McIlroy?
You know, I think that's comparing apples and oranges, sort of. You know, that's a hard question to even answer. You know, they're both great players. Rory hits the ball further. They all hit the ball further than Tiger did in his heyday. But all I could answer that with is they're both great players.
That's a good answer. I wouldn't expect anything else.
Hey, Fluff, you were on the bag for Peter Jacobson for quite some time before you had the opportunity with Tiger. How did that chance, the opportunity to get on Tiger's bag, happen? What led up to it? How did it happen?
Well, in 96 at the PGA Championship, Peter was hurting big time. We actually withdrew mid round on the second, on Friday's round there. And as he was putting things away and getting ready to go to a plane, he said, I'm going home and I'm not gonna play again until I'm healthy. And so he went home and I went home, and I was just kind of waiting it out, hoping that, you know, he would heal up quickly and we'd be back at it. And in that time in between, I got a call and Tiger asked me what I was doing, and I said I wasn't doing anything. Yeah. He said, can you work the next seven events for me? I says, well, I can't answer that, but I would love to work for you and see how long that I would be available, kind of. I felt like I had to run it by Peter. And he told me, basically, he said, I don't know when I'm playing again, go for it. So that's what I did.
Did that call just kind of come from out of the blue? Do you have any idea he was going to be reaching out to you?
No, none. I had gotten to know Tiger a little bit, very little, but I actually got to know him more at the 95 British Open. We were paired with him. Hmm. We were paired with Tiger and Ernie the first 2 days at that Open. And that's where I got to kind of know Tiger a little bit. But no, I had no idea that I would get that phone call.
Bob, I know you've known Tiger for a long time and covered him. Fluff, I'm kind of interested. What were your initial impressions of a very young Tiger at that 95 Open? And what was he like? What was it just like caddying for him and being around him at a time where he was emerging and becoming the superstar that he became?
Well, gosh, I don't know. How did he act? He was a kid, so he had a lot of kid in him, which was just fine. He was fun to be around. He liked joking some, and it was pretty special. And as far as the golf was concerned, he hit shots that basically I don't know as I'd ever seen before. I don't know, that's a funny thing to say, and I'm not sure I'm even correct, but let's just say that he hit the golf ball with a sound that was pretty gosh darn special. It was quite solid. Just every trip, every swing he made was solid. And it was fun to watch him play.
Bob, I want to talk to Fluff about growing up in Maine and so forth, but one more question about Tiger. And I know that he let you go and you really held no bad feelings towards him, but on the golf course with him, when you were on the bag with him, what did he ask you other than yardage? Did you read putts? What were the needs, the demands he had from you?
Oh, a little bit of everything. He wanted input on club selection, and kind of like most everybody that I worked for, he read a lot of his own putts, but he would call me in to look at putts from time to time. Sometimes I read more putts during a round than other times. But, basically club selection. And he wanted me to help him with the wind. He let me caddy is how I'll summarize it. He wanted my input.
Let me ask you this, Fluff. You also caddied for Michelle Wee. How'd that come about?
Oh, I don't know. I have really no idea, other than I can't remember now if it was her father or her mother. I can't remember which of the parents it was that actually called me and asked me the week that they wanted me to work, was I available? I was wide open, so I said, yeah, sure. I'll come down and caddy for Michelle. That'd be great. It was a simple phone call from the parents, and I said yes.
Fluff, she was only, 13 years old. Was she playing against the guys? Was that a tour event, or what was that?
No, it was a ladies' event down in Williamsburg, Virginia, Kingsmill.
Kingsmill, yeah. Really happy to be joined by Fluff Cowan here on Musings on Golf. You were a good athlete. You grew up in Maine. You were a good athlete. What sports did you play? Obviously, including golf. What did you play?
Well, I played them all. I went to a small high school, so I played football, basketball, and baseball.
And what about golf? And first of all, of those three you mentioned, what were you the best at?
Basketball.
Yeah? Good shooter?
Pretty good shooter, yeah.
And how did the golf thing come to be?
Oh, my father and one of my uncles played golf all my young life, and so I just fell into it with them. The high school I went to didn't have a golf team when I went there, so... There was no formal golf, but I was playing whenever I could, kind of.
Then you ended up playing at William Penn College in Iowa. How did a kid from New England end up in Iowa?
Assistant football coach my senior year in high school. I graduated from William Penn, and he was operating the Police Athletic League that summer, and my father was working with him and helping him as an assistant, sort of. Mm-hmm. And the only school that I applied to out of high school was the University of Maine. I got my letter of denial with about 2 or 3 weeks before school was to start, and I was okay with it. I didn't really feel like going to college. But my father wouldn't hear of it. When he told Colin Quinn that, Colin said to him, well, if you want him to go, I can get him into a school. And bingo, next thing I knew, I was going to Iowa, going to William Penn. It was kind of a roundabout way, but that's how I got there.
Are some golf courses easier to caddy than other golf courses?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for no other reason than terrain.
Right.
I'd rather walk Harbortown every day than Muirfield Village.
Right, right.
Or Sugarloaf.
Because Harbortown's fairly flat, right?
Very flat.
What's the hardest? Hey, what's the hardest tour course that you caddied and why? Was it Muirfield?
No, not really. Probably back in the days, it was Castle Pines was really difficult to walk. It was really, really hilly, and the altitude had an effect on you. So that was a pretty, pretty difficult golf course to walk. Augusta was not easy, but it wasn't awful. And Muirfield Village is kind of right there with the same spot, more or less, as Augusta. What, not an easy walk, but not the worst walk ever either. I'd say the worst ever was probably Castle Pines.
Hey, Fluff, did you ever consider doing any on-course commentary?
No.
I'm happy. I'd have been out of a job.
You would have been, right?
Oh, no, you wouldn't have been, Bob. You're a whole lot better than I am, or ever could be.
Oh, boy. What a compliment.
Hey, Fluff, take us back to when you got, when you started caddying on the tour, what, mid-70s? Not exactly a lot of money, but you had to have had a lot of fun with fellow caddies on the road. You guys, and most of the time, you guys stayed together. I mean, that's all what took place, right? You same room. And did I read that whoever had the best round that day got the bed?
Well, that's a true story. Yeah. Low round, well, it depends. The room usually had two beds, but sometimes there were at least four of us in there. Not always, but most of the time.
How'd you get Peters back?
I was already out there caddying when he came as a rookie, and he had a caddy that I can't remember exactly when Swanee showed up, but he had a caddy from Oregon that he knew growing up from junior golf in Oregon. I got to know Swanee really first, and through Swanee, I got to know Peter some. And then Swanee decided he didn't want to do it anymore and went back home. And so there was Peter just as an open bag. I don't know how to say it. I just believed that he had potential to be a really good player. And there he was wide open. So I thought, well, you should make a move. And so I did. And he said, let's give it a try. And that try lasted 18 and a half years.
Pretty good try.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Did you guys click right away, personality-wise, et cetera?
Yeah, I would have to say yes to that. It was all quite easy from the very get-go. Yeah.
Because I would have
a great guy, easy to work for, I don't know. His record doesn't show up to be as good as I believe he is, even. Maybe not today because he's all bionic anymore, but. Peter was a great player in his heyday.
You know, Bob, I caddied for about a dozen years out at Burning Tree, where my dad was the head professional for many years. And he had his own. My dad was a caddy himself at Cumberland Country Club. It's how he got into the game. And he actually had a caddy school at Burning Tree, where a lot of young kids really, learn the art / science, whatever you want to call it, of caddying. And a lot of kids, helped them through high school, et cetera. I was very fortunate that way, right? Fluff, in terms of how you actually got into caddying, much less caddying on the PGA Tour, how did you start as a caddy?
Well, I didn't really start. There was really no place to caddy where I grew up. The only caddying I ever did was a couple of times for my father. I don't know. I was working as an assistant golf pro at a club in Maine. And I got fired in the middle of the summer. And the tour was coming to Hartford, Connecticut. And a good friend of mine wasn't working either. And we just said, hey, let's go. Let's go see if we can get a job caddying. And off we went. And I've been doing it ever since.
What a story.
Who was the first bag you had?
Well, the first job I ever had, really, it was a Monday qualifier back in the day. Of Monday qualifying, it was at Tunxus Plantation for the Greater Hartford Open, and the guy I worked for, his name's David Smith.
Okay.
Yeah. David didn't seem to last long.
Bob, I don't think we've had Mr. Smith on Musings on Golf. I don't think he lasted very long.
No, I don't think so.
And I was so green that I didn't even know enough to go out to Weathersfield to see if there was a job available of somebody who was actually in the tournament. Oh, that was the extent of that. a week or two down the road, there was the Buick Open was being played, and all the Monday Rabbits, all the Monday qualifiers were getting into the tournament because it was an offset event. It wasn't actually even at Warwick Hills. It was at the Flint Elks Club. And I don't know, David must have thought that I did okay because he asked me if I could, if I was going to be there and would I work for him again. And so that was the first tournament that I actually worked was the Buick Open.
And who'd you caddy for there?
Made the cut or not.
Who'd you caddy for at Buick that first time?
At that tournament I'm talking about?
Yeah, was that David as well?
Yeah, I worked for David Smith. Yeah.
All right, Kelly, find out from me who Fluff would like to play with.
Well, I'm going to find out in a second, but I know how big of a deadhead that Fluff is. I got to find out from you, Fluff. And I understand how big the Grateful Dead are to so many. How'd you become such a Grateful Dead fan? How many concerts did you go to when they were all together? What's your favorite song?
Well, I honestly never really kept a very good track. I mean, I can kind of go back and remember most of them. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how many I've seen. Probably maybe, I'm going to give you a guess of approximately 30.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, other friends, other people just got me listening to them. And I loved them from the beginning. And, you know, to this day, they're maybe my favorite band. There's only one other band that would rival them as far as favorites. Little Feet.
Little Feet. Yeah, sure. Wow. You have a favorite, Grateful Dead song?
Oh, Jesus, so many. I don't know. I've always loved Cassidy, one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Bertha is another one of my favorite songs. I'd say those two would be the first two I come up with.
Love it. All right, so final question for me as Mr. Bupka set it up. We asked this of all of our guests. If you could have a dream foursome, yourself and three others, who would those three be, and they could be living or deceased? Who would they be, and where would you play that round of golf?
Well, it would be Peter Jacobson.
Yep.
His father, Early. My father, Colin. And me.
That's a good foursome.
Where would you want to play that one round of with that dream foursome?
Kibo Valley.
Where is that?
Bahama, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
That surprised a lot of people.
Is that kind of where you grew up playing?
No. Kibo was a good 2.5 hour ride from where I grew up. But I don't know how to describe it other than, to me, it's one of the most mystical places I've ever played.
I think that's the word, Bob. You and I had Luke Donald on a few weeks ago, and he talked about, I believe he said Cypress Point as his favorite place. And he talked about the aura there and sort of that mystical thing. There's something about certain places, right, guys?
Yeah, I do believe that's so.
Well, you've been a pleasure, Fluff, and you've been a good friend and great for the game of golf for a long time. And I appreciate every moment of our relationship.
Thank you very much, Bob. I couldn't agree with you more. I feel the same way.
Bob, I've got to ask one final question. It's the obvious one, the mustache. Fluff, how old were you when you grew the mustache? Have you essentially always had it through your adult life?
No, I seem to remember. I don't know. I'm sure it was before this. I'm sure it was, well, there was a period back in the truth, I don't know. I guess it was not until the early 70s, maybe. I had a full beard, and the mustache survived all that. So the mustache has probably been on there since 1972, maybe.
Robert, by my count, that's more than 50 years of a mustachioed man.
I did shave it.
What?
In the I remember this like it was yesterday. I shaved it in 1984 and basically started growing it immediately back. So yeah. the way it is today has been there since 1984.
That's a good run.
Yeah. That's the year George Orwell wrote that sinking book. Or maybe it wasn't the year he wrote it. I don't remember, but he called it 19.
Wrote it about that. Hey, Fluff, this has been a lot of fun. Happy birthday to you. I know you're turning 29 again. Hope you have a great great birthday at the end of this week. Been a pleasure having you with Bob and me. Well, Bob, we thank Fluff very much for that terrific interview. You know, ironically, the day that we post this, we learned of the passing of Tiger's mother, Kultita, and she meant the world to him. On his post today, he said, she was my biggest fan, greatest supporter. Without her, none of my personal achievements would have been possible. I know he missed his father dearly when he passed, and I'm sure that heartfelt sadness is something that Tiger's going to feel now and for a long time to go with his mother gone.
Yeah, his mother was a very special lady. She never really gave interviews, very quiet. I had the luxury that St. Andrews, just outside the clubhouse, had an opportunity. I was there. I asked her if she'd give me a couple of minutes, and she was very gracious, as she always has been. Sorry to hear of her passing.
Our condolences to Tiger Woods, his kids, her grandchildren, Sam and Charlie, and all who will miss his mother very, very much. Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. You know, Bob, before we heard that interview, you said something that really kind of bears out from the interview we heard with Fluff. He's a steady presence, isn't he? He's the guy who doesn't have too many highs or lows, and I think that's invaluable week in and week out with a lot of players.
Well, well said, Kelly, because, you know, there's no more valuable asset that a caddy can bring to a player is not to get too excited, not to get too down, just try and keep it as even keel as possible. And I don't think there's any better even keel caddy that's ever existed other than Fluff Cowan.
Yeah, well said. And really, thank you, Fluff, for joining us. It was a real treat. We were delighted to have you. Bob, let's touch on a couple of things. Rory being up first. Kind of a funny little story. He's been playing the TaylorMade golf ball for a while, but he used a different model that apparently he had been playing at Michael Jordan's course down here in Palm Beach County, Martin County area in South Florida. Kind of liked it and put it in play this week. I don't know, Bob, if that was the difference. Okay, but I pretty much guarantee when he tees it back up in 2 weeks at the Genesis, he's going to have that same model ball back in play. You don't go away from a winner, do you?
I know it's the difference because it's in his head that it's the difference. And that's all it takes with a player. He's found a golf ball that performs well for him. Mm-hmm. You perform well with that golf ball. You bet your bottom dollar, Kelly Elbin, and he will have that ball in that bag the next time he tees it up.
3.6 million reasons at Pebble Beach to have that ball in his bag, and even more when they teed up in a couple weeks. He had a nice little lead, Bob. Shane Lowry didn't make birdie at 17, which I think would have put a little bit of pressure on Rory. So he had a 3-shot margin going to the 18th tee at Pebble, hit an iron off the tee, played it really smart. Let's hear what he had to say with that extra little cushion heading to the great par 5 18th.
As much as I've hit, you know, a couple of good tee shots down the 18th this week, I was excited to have a little bit of a cushion there so I didn't have to hit driver again. So, yeah, I think, look, coming to the last hole at Pebble, with a three-shot lead and being able to enjoy it somewhat was really cool. It's been a great week for a lot of different reasons. Hole in one, playing Cypress for the first time, obviously getting a win. It's been a really cool week, and obviously couldn't wish for a better start for my PGA Tour season. I've been on a nice run of form since last fall. I've played some really good golf and continued that into this year, and just obviously, as I said, just a great way to start the year.
Bob, he sounds very much under control to me. Not altogether different, but maybe a little bit more just relaxed and under control and not feeling pressured.
Well, the only thing better than a three-shot lead going to the final hole at Pebble Beach is a four-shot lead. Rory is so good. He's not had the best breaks. He's had this kind of problem, that kind of problem. But I think this year the problems are going to go away, and I think he's going to leave Augusta National with a green jacket on his shoulders, and boy, what a popular win that'll be.
All signs seem to point that way, but we've got a number of tournaments ahead of that. Bob, this week the always crazy WM Phoenix Open, Rory McIlroy will not be there, but it's a really good field. Scottie Scheffler, who played well in his debut last week at Pebble after that hand injury on Christmas Day, is in the field. Hideki Matsuyama, Wyndham Clark, Corey Connors, Sepp Straka, Matt Fitzpatrick, Tom Kim. It's a good field this week. I anticipate there'll certainly be enough energy from the crowd. There always is, Bob.
Yeah, this is a gift to golf fans. The Phoenix Open with all hooting and hollering, and it's a little bit different. It's a nice break and always a lot of fun to watch.
16th hole is the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass is the signature hole there. The 16th is the signature hole for craziness in golf at the WM Waste Management Phoenix Open. Hey, Bob, interesting little side story. Starting next year, the seven tour events will no longer have Monday qualifiers. And the reason is that those fields are being trimmed from 132 players to 120. And they don't have room for them anymore. And it's kind of a shame, Bob, because there have been so many great stories from guys who have tried to Monday qualify. Just this week at Phoenix, they've been doing this 77 straight years, Bob. They've had Monday qualifiers. 89 guys tried for three spots. A guy named Stephen Fisk shot 63, along with Max McGreevy and Will Chandler. Those are the three Monday qualifiers who will play this week at the Waste Management. Hope they play well. Hope it's a great story. The most incredible story, the very first guy to be a Monday qualifier happened at the Phoenix Open in 1980. A guy named Jeff Mitchell Monday qualified, and then he went on and won what was then the Phoenix Open. There have been five guys in all who have Monday qualified and then won the tournament itself. Corey Connors, the Canadian, who's really become a terrific player, Bob. He was the last to do it at the 2019 Valero Texas Open. I don't know, Bob. Everything changes, right? And this, to me, is from a storytelling standpoint. You're not going to have those stories anymore. It's kind of a shame.
Yeah, the Cinderella section of the book gets closed just a little bit when players don't have a wild outside shot to get into the event, and then once they're in, then anything can happen.
Yeah, LIV Golf 2025 debuts this week in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Phil Mickelson hurt himself, minor shoulder injury while working out. He said he's going to be able to play next week when they're in Australia. That event, I think this is the first time I think that Fox has the coverage of to some extent. And our guest next week, Bob, Joey D. The very, golf fitness expert, one of his prize students is Dustin Johnson, Dustin will be in the field this week. So Live Golf gets going again. And Joey D next week, Bob. I don't know if some people have heard of him. Boy, he has been the guy in terms of fitness, golf-specific fitness, for many a tour player and many an aspiring tour player.
You're absolutely right. Matter of fact, I'm going to start working out right after we finish this so I can get ready for Joey D.
An old friend.
Certainly somebody that's in great shape.
Yeah, he is. And he's really meant so much to so many tour players. So we look forward to Joey D next week on Musings on Golf for the always in condition Bob Bupka. Kelly Elbin signing off. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.